college radio DJs during the 90s, hosts Keith and Steve helped expose bands like Nirvana, Pavement, and PJ Harvey. They went to shows, interviewed musicians, and reviewed albums for various signs and papers. They worked security at concerts and once even did load-in for Phish. Now, they're dads. Whether you want to explore lesser-known music or take a trip down memory lane, tune into the new Dad Rock. Join hosts Keith and Steve as they navigate the ages together, sharing their love of music across various eras and genres. Always well-intentioned, often well-informed, seldom boring, the new Dad Rock will expand your mind.
Welcome to the new Dad Rock.
Well, I mean, we're going to talk about new music today, but I'm not sure I consider it new music.
Are you referring, of course, to the latest song by this upstart band, The Beatles?
Yes, which is a fine song, by the way, and their 12-minute video about how they put it all together is amazing, and I recommend it. I've watched it 2 or 3 times already.
Yeah, so Now and Then is a new Beatles song. They unearthed a recording of John Lennon on vocals, and they used AI to isolate his voice from a really messy-sounding audio tape, from what I understand. And they used AI to take his voice out, and then the rest of the guys, well, the rest of the living guys, George Harrison didn't have anything to do, I guess. Did he?
No, he didn't, because he's dead.
Right, sorry. But did they use his parts, though? I forget now.
No, so they did not. So there were three songs.
So it's not The Beatles. I'm throwing the yellow flag.
No, that is interesting. So, it's John Lennon and Paul McCartney. Ringo on drums, that's fine. But so they did this before two other songs in like 1994, 95. Real Love and something else. Mm-hmm. And they all did it because Harrison's still there.
Yeah, for the anthologies, yeah.
Totally. But this one, the quality wasn't good enough, and like the piano would override his voice and vice versa. So when Peter Jackson was doing the Apple, the series that was the Get Back sessions or whatever, did you see mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, I started that was cool. to. I think I watched it when I had COVID maybe. And
I was going to say, even came out then early it, COVID.
But even then it was like too boring.
I ate it up, but yeah, it's a good background thing to have on. So
yeah,
anyway,
kind of like Paul McCartney is writing Yesterday over in the background, and no one's paying attention to him.
Oh, amazing, yeah, that's how it goes sometimes. And so this one, they did the album, and like Yoko gave them the tapes, and like, well, see what you could do. And inside this 12-minute video on YouTube, around minute 6, they kind of show the old one, and they go, and then all of a sudden, bam, like 2 minutes later, and Paul McCartney goes like, like to mimic the machine or whatever. All of a sudden, it's beautiful vocals. And it was just him on his piano, like singing as he was just making something up, I guess, you know, in 77, 78, you know, 79 in New York. So it's a really good song. I dig it. But yeah, for the George Harrison part, Paul McCartney explains as it's a George Harrison-inspired guitar slide part.
I mean, it wasn't recorded. They weren't the Beatles in the late 70s. George Harrison's not on it. I really can't consider it a Beatles song. And to me, it like you said, it's a decent song. It sounds like the 90s to me. It sounds like a song from the 90s.
That's fair. That's probably when their music stopped evolving at all. I do want to say this, though. It's not like there's... I don't even know how to say it. There's more new old stuff, right? Going on right now. Like, so this Beatles song has to be number one. If it's not now, it will be by the end of the week, right?
Yeah, and no? I think the Rolling Stones' most recent album was like number one on the album charts.
Damn it! That's crap, dude. That's
like, crap. We put out the new Dad Rock. You know, we're trying to update Dad Rock. And here we are. Yeah. Classic rock is eating our lunch. Yeah.
I agree. I mean, it's got to be the first septetarians rock band. I mean,
octogenarians? Yeah. Oh, you mean the rock band's been around for 70 years.
Yeah, right? Like, literally. Literally. Weren't they lads in school and they met when they were 12, 14 and were doing music the whole time? So that is, well, congratulations to them. I mean... Imagine us doing this podcast for 70 years.
We barely got to 70 episodes.
We're knocking on 80 right now.
Knock, knock, knocking on 80's door.
Dude, it is 1979.
It is 1979. Episode. And you know what happened in 1979? the Sony Walkman came out. Talk about a game changer. Talking about ushering in a new era of the 80s, the Walkman.
Yeah, I mean, my whole musical life was probably born from the Walkman. I mean, besides the Fisher-Price record stereo. But the Walkman is what allowed me to listen to music as I delivered newspapers all those years on my bicycle around the neighborhood.
And now you can't even, riding bikes with Walkman, mowing lawns with the Walkman on, I'm amazed I can hear anything.
Yes, I even took a hearing test on Instagram and my hearing was surprisingly better. I'm assuming this thing was true. surprisingly better than I could have imagined.
Nonetheless,
I mean, no one else is giving me a free hearing test randomly when I didn't want it.
Yeah. So, yeah, but back to 1979. In 1979, the Beatles were broken up. The Rolling Stones were... They had a couple more gasps left in them, but they were...
No, they might have been broken up for a couple years.
No, they weren't. They're broken. No, they kept going. I don't think they've ever broken up. They just keep going through. But my point is, in 1979, these number one hits... of today weren't even cool. They were old hat. So let's get down to it. What was happening in 1979? So disco.
I was just going to talk about Disco Demolition Night. You ever hear about this?
I was going to say the exact same thing. Because we've been talking about disco, like, from the Krautrock episode in 74, when Krautrock was starting to wind down and the metronomic beats had been taken over by disco, and there was a big clapback against disco, and it culminated, like you said, in Detroit, right? Or excuse me, Chicago, on Wrigley Field in 1979, Disco Demolition Night. Keith, take it away.
I think it happened at a baseball park, Comiskey Park.
Yeah, Comiskey Park. I'm sorry. Yeah, not Wrigley.
Was it between a doubleheader of a baseball game?
It was between a doubleheader, and you got like, and I think they gave you 79-cent tickets if you brought a disco record to burn or otherwise destroy.
This sounds like a top 10 night.
Yeah. Like, well,
for music?
Well, they had this whole pile of all the disco records, and they lit it up. And the next thing you know, people were running out on the field, and there was essentially a riot happening. So,
I know what my YouTube viewing after this is. I'm totally looking this up. I mean, this could have been a whole. They should do one of those 33 and a third books on Disco Demolition Night itself.
Yeah. Well, this put an exclamation point at the end of the disco era.
Yeah, I mean, like Donna Summer, the first female artist to have 5 top 10 hits in the same year was in 79. So Donna Summer's killing it right now.
What I'm saying is the disco era, like as a cultural phenomenon, the music stayed, but the phenomenon ended and it morphed into new wave, and popular music of the 80s was very different than disco.
Yeah, and you're not going to believe what the number one hit on the Billboards was. That was the first time in over a year that a song that hit number one was not either a disco song or a ballad.
What was it?
My Sharona by the Knack.
My Sharona by the Knack. That was a one-hit wonder.
Yeah, but it broke the disco and, you know, or the ballad, like, dominating it. Like, literally there was no rock music for over a year on the Billboard 100. Like, that's how dark this time period is. That's why when we were doing episode 78, we were having a hard time.
Even the flash of the pan hot acts, such as the Sex Pistols, they had broken up by 78. And in early 79, Sid Vicious, who in some drunken mix-up killed or accidentally killed Nancy, his lover, and then he gets out of jail on February 1st, scores some heroin and then parties until he ODs early on February 2nd, 1979. So
that's pretty rough. I mean, a lot of good stuff happening that year. I mean, Bauhaus does their first release of their debut single, Bela Lugosi's Dead.
That was their debut song.
Yeah, which, if memory serves me correct, they were kind of just jamming and they were like, whoa, 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 let's do this.
Isn't the song like 10 minutes long too?
Yeah. And it's always 10 minutes long, I think, when they play it live. It is great. It's probably one of the most haunting or creepy songs out there. Like, we were talking about that for the Halloween episode. Often most Halloween songs are not scary, but this gothic stuff was.
Yeah.
It was also a good time because there was no cell phones. It was, like, very dark. Cars were dangerous. Like, you know, like, the falls were way different back then in 79 when I was a kid.
And I feel like it was the era of the serial killer. Like, at this point in history, we're in between the Son of Sam and the deliberate stranger, Ted Bundy.
Well, so if our music podcast ends, we can always move into serial killers, apparently.
Well, that... Isn't that what all podcasts are in the end? It's all about murders or death.
Yeah, well, okay, you already got our death in. Sid Vicious died.
Yeah, well, you're the one that started it with when did Elvis die? Not this year. Okay, we'll keep going.
It was Elvis.
Oh, listen to this. Ted Bundy is between 74 and 78. I was totally wrong. So... we already had The Summer of Sam, the Son of Sam, who killed during the summer, and they made a movie. And everyone had just gone through Ted Bundy, 1974 to 1978. So, yeah, this is truly a dark time. No wonder you have Susie and the Banshees. No wonder you have The Cure with their first album coming out in 79. You have Bauhaus, this gothic, dark, depressing era. And then, you know, and then politically you have the conservatives coming in the U.S. and in Britain in the form of Ronald Reagan and the Iron Lady, Margaret Thatcher.
Well, this would explain possibly the best album that came out that year. But well, it came out in 79 in England, but in 1980 in America, The Clash, London Calling.
With the same cover as an Elvis album.
Oh, really?
Yeah, with the smashing guitar and the font down the side, you know, the pink and the green. That's a nod to an Elvis album. I can't remember which one. Kind of like how Ween has nods to other albums in their covers.
For sure. So London Calling was 19 songs, 65 minutes. It's a double record. Were double records double tape cassettes too?
Well, I mean, cassettes
65 minutes, you can get that on a cassette. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Cassettes could hold 45 minutes aside. Remember, 90-minute tape or 100-minute tape? Yeah.
Yeah. Easy. So, or the, yeah. Okay. So this is okay. Single tape, and The Clash were interesting because they were a mix of rock, ska, and reggae, with their very political songs. I feel that The Clash is possibly an album that I don't appreciate enough. I never really lived with it.
Well, one of the things I can say about listening to the 70s a little bit more closely in the last few episodes is a band like the Talking Heads, I realized that I liked a lot more than I realize. And The Clash, for me, is one of those bands, like you said, I didn't ever listen to them much. And I feel like I'm going to discover them at some point. And, you know, I got to keep trying, man.
By the way, the whole death of disco, the whole first gothic album, so scary, the whole serial murder thing. I accidentally ended up listening to a Rupert Holmes album called Partner in Crime. It's from 1979.
Okay.
You know that famous song, the Pina Colada song?
Oh, yeah.
If you like Pina Coladas and Getting Caught in the Rain, if you're not into yoga, if you have half a brain, if you like Making Love at Midnight in the Dunes on the Cape.
Yeah, we got it. We're gonna run into a copyright issue if you keep going, man.
Then I'm the love that you've looked for. Write to me and escape. So the Pina Colada song is actually called Escape.
Right. And then in parentheses.
The Pina Colada song, which they probably added after it was famous, by the way. I bet it just came out as Escape. But this guy ends up, in like 5 years' time, ends up writing The Mystery of Edwin Drood. So that was his playwright debut. But this album, which I was doing yard work, and this song came on as I was listening to 79 songs from 79, and I hit a button or two by accident. I wasn't paying attention, and all of a sudden I listened to the whole album.
Okay.
So the next song is the title track, and it's basically about someone who shows up in New York City and meets her pimp like 30 seconds after getting off, and he is her family, and in return he beats up on her and takes all she can earn. But there's like this yacht rock music going on. Like, it's it's weird. It's probably, you know, it's probably Steely Dan adjacent, which is why I don't get it. But it reminded me of like the Afghan Wigs Gentlemen, but yacht rock. But because then there's another song, Lunch Hour, and it's like, and it's lunch hour, lunch hour, lunch hour, lunch hour. How do you all find time to eat? Well, there are so many people in the street, and all of them are hungry, hungry, hungry. It's just weird. There's a song that was pretty famous called Answering Machine that was somehow about a marriage, but the chorus was this. I'm so sorry, you've just reached my answering machine. I'm not in at present. I'm sure you know the whole routine. Leave your name and number, and I'll try to get back to you. You have 30 seconds to talk to me before you're through. So, I mean, answering machines must have been totally new. That must have been like the first answering machine song.
Yeah, exactly. And that's probably why
the whole song is about a marriage, like, dissolving. Like, cause, so that's the chorus, and like they're leaving a message in the machine, but it always keeps getting cut off. And then, the last one, Him. This was, I think, a number one hit by him, by the way. I think he had two number one hits, or top 10 hits. And
okay, so he's not a one-hit wonder.
No, to him, what's she going to do about him? She's going to have to do without him, or do without me. No one gets to get it for free. It's me or it's him. This album, with these kind of dark lyrics, I almost feel like it's like a pre-Ween album. Yeah. I'm not sure what's going on. Like, if it's being serious about these topics, like someone's been on cocaine for 5 or 10 years and things are falling apart, or if they're like making a joke, because the music and the topics just don't go together. Yeah. But
well, Roxanne, you don't have to wear that dress tonight. I feel like that's such I think the prostitute, or the prostitute with a heart of gold, is such a cliche, and it's one of those things that, you know, middling writers come up with as the topic of a song. And, you know, they're under the gun, they're in a studio putting together an album, and what comes up? This, because they're up late at night, and who are the people that they see? Simple as that, I think.
Yeah. Anyway, I just want to say I took one for the team on this one. I was doing research, and I accidentally got in, and I like that. I only got to the second song. I'm like, I'm going to listen to the whole thing.
Wow. So Rupert Holmes, man. Wow, that's pretty crazy.
The Pina Colada song. Yeah, it's kind of like what you were saying about Heroes. Like, the lyrics are darker than you realize.
I think the 70s are darker than you realize.
Yeah. So,
I mean,
well, Steve, we did it.
We did it. We made it through the 70s. And so I look back and I remember Pink Floyd, Another Brick in the Wall Part 2, the "We don't need no education." That came out in November of 79. And I totally remember that. And that is, I think, the beginning of when I became cognizant of music around me. So 80, 81, I remember I started to listen to the Casey Kasem Countdown. So we've gotten through the 70s, where classic rock and the adjacent to classic rock, dad rock, or new dad rock that we've kind of tried to highlight over the years of the decade, through Kraut Rock and David Bowie and Iggy Pop and Para Ubu and Talking Heads and whatnot. Now we're, I think, about to embark on the 80s, where we have a lot more firsthand knowledge.
Yeah, my 7-year-old memory is going to be really, really good.
Well, I'm not saying it's all going to come out in the first episode of 1980, but looking back at the 70s, I mean, what do you have any takeaways from, you know, kind of our approach, the way we did it?
Yeah, so it was interesting, the weaving in and out of all the years, like the way things were connected, like the Iggy Pop being at a Doors show, or you know, how people come together, learning their music in order, because sometimes when I first get into artists, as we'll find out with like REM or Depeche Mode or U2, you can go backwards. Like, they already exist when you find out about them, and they have 4 or 5 albums, so you learn about them in that. But it was giving me a better sense of time.
In 1979, The Doors, The End, was used in Apocalypse Now. So it became popular again. So we started the 70s with The Doors, you know, dying out, and, you know, The End was from their first album, so 65, 66. But now they've ended this, they started the 70s with The Doors dying, and then they've risen again at the end of the 70s through The End in Apocalypse Now.
The other thing I kind of take away is that none of these are my bands. these are all like the bands that other people reference as bands. So I didn't listen to any of this in real time, really, unless accidentally, like in the movie, in the movies, or you know, in, walking through a mall. But so, none of this. I mean, maybe Pink Floyd, like The Wall, maybe Pink Floyd now. But like, there's nothing in the 70s that I feel that I really own. Whereas the 60s, I mean, the Beatles and the Doors, I feel that I spent a lot of quality time with them. In the 70s, there's Led Zeppelin, there's Pink Floyd, but not a whole lot of stuff I listened to before we started doing the New Dad Rock.
It's the classic rock, but it's the nascent styles that became dominant in the 80s.
I mean, maybe the New Dad Rock was born in 79, because like The Cure has their first album. I think the Dead Kennedys played, and like the Ramones are going strong. And like maybe the stuff I listened to was actually early 80s, but it all goes back to I probably heard everything in 85, 86, 87. So I was probably getting like 5-10 years of new wave music before I knew what was going on.
Yeah. I mean, your parents, I mean, my parents definitely did not listen to any new wave. It was AM talk radio, and occasionally there would be like an oldie show on.
Yeah, I'd have to get to 10th grade or 9th or 10th grade before I started getting into decent music.
Yeah.
Like, we have a boombox on the street listening to cassette tapes.
Yeah, but I mean, one of the things I think I look back going into the 70s, a few bands from the 70s that I've always listened to, like you said, there's Pink Floyd. I'll add Rush to that, and Steely Dan I listened to a lot more than you did, of course. There's a few Bob Dylan albums from the 70s, a few David Bowie albums from the 70s, and then yeah. Can was a band that I started listening to maybe a decade ago, but mm-hmm. they'd always been referenced, and you know, I even wrote about listening to Can before I listened to Can. So what I wanted to say about that is you go back and listen to those bands. There's all the bands that were adjacent. And like you said, it was the bands that inspired the bands that you liked in the 80s and the 90s and later. So this is the inspiration. This is adjacent. There's so much music out there going back into the 70s in the sidelines. So it dumbfounds me that people will listen to the same song over and over again. So my advice is, find a path. You know, I like the crazy stuff like Ween and Primus and the Butthole Surfers, so I end up finding Para Ubu, you know, further back along the way. But, you know, you could listen to some of the deeper cuts of Led Zeppelin, or, you know, maybe you go off and, you know, you like Prague, so you detour into Hawkwind or something like that. So, I don't know. I think what I learned is there's so much music out there.
Yeah, I think so there's much. Also the ballads, like Kenny Rogers songs, or, I mean, Phil Collins, Genesis is going on. Like, all these other things are going on. There's a whole bunch of stuff we didn't talk about at all, like The Fall is a band I've never understood. But
yeah.
Some of the people I listen to love. Wire has a couple songs, Buzzcocks. We didn't talk about them at all.
Yeah, and these bands exert and influence the bands that we liked later in the later half of the 80s. So
maybe we have to re-record the 70s and do it over, start it fresh.
Well, that's the thing. That's what the New Dad Rock is after. It's finding the outliers and the ones adjacent that you just don't realize. They wrote the songs that your favorite bands covered.
I thought you were about to break into they write the songs. Who's that by? Is that Barry Manilow?
Back to Barry Manilow. That would be hilarious.
Man, I gotta listen to more Barry. By the way, can I still buy an 8-track player? All the record players I'm looking at look ridiculous. Why not an 8-track player, too?
We should bring back 8-track players. We brought back the Pavement Nigel Godrick order. Maybe the next thing we try to bring back is 8-track.
We forgot two things about 1979.
What are they?
Smashing Pumpkins have a song called 1979.
Oh, I thought we were gonna get away with it.
Where I looked at the lyrics today, and there's nothing about 1979 in them.
And the song doesn't sound anything like 1979 either.
All right, then the other thing about 1979 is Death from Above 1979. You listen to them at all?
I am aware of them, but I haven't heard anything by them since like 2000.
It's, oh, okay, so, I mean, Darren, I love this. I've seen them live a couple times, but basically it's a bassist and a drummer. And it's just really like aggressive, like dancey. Maybe not. Actually, it's probably not that. It's probably, but it's like... It's more machine-like and dancey. I think you love it, actually. Death from Above, their first album, is probably 2004. Get that one. I forget what it's called. Yeah, listen to that. That album's really, really good. Really, really good. I think about it as like Morphine, but dance music.
Yeah, I think I might have heard that, or at least a song or two, but they don't have a saxophone, right?
No saxophone. Yeah, it's good. It's good. It's good.
Okay, so I think that might be a wrap on the 70s, Keith.
Woo!
And it was quite an amazing journey going back. And
the end.
After a little break where I wander off into the mountains, we'll probably be back with the 80s in a similar format.
Totally. Video killed the rock star. Steve, good luck with your ski season.
We can't wait.
We can't wait to talk to you all soon. Take care. Stay safe.
The new dad rock.